Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. You're with Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. We're broadcasting here from, better known as Mississippi, Fresno. Man, it's been a hot day. Today was 104, and I'm telling you, I felt every bit of the 110. But it was a good day. It's been a long day. It's been a bittersweet day for me as a black man here in the United States of America. I've just been processing the day and trying to figure out a few things on my own as a black man. It's really tough living as a black man here in the United States of America. It's probably one of the most, I don't even know how to even explain it. I guess if you're a black man, you kind of know what I'm talking about, or black and brown. But today was the day that they buried George Floyd. Today was his burial. It's just a bittersweet day for me today. I just, people have been kind of asking me, you know, what's wrong, and you know, I guess as being a civil rights leader, it's, you know, having to deal with people issues day in and day out, people constantly pulling on you and trying to find resources for them, and you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just, I'm trying to process, where are we at right now as black people? You know, what should we be doing? What should we not be doing here in America? Because it's quite clear to me that there's a problem. There's been a problem for over 400 years. The behavior that we have as black people right now is not the normal behavior that our ancestors had. We learned this behavior coming to America. Like I said, today is George Floyd's funeral. You know, I'm trying to process being in his shoes right now, when the police officer had his knee on his neck. I'm trying, you know, and I look at the video over and over and over, and I'm looking at the eyes of the officers as people was telling him, you know, to get off his neck, and it was like, hello, my sister. It's like the police officer didn't give a damn. I mean, it was like, but, you know, like I told someone the other day that if I would have had same position with a dog or a cat or an animal on the neck of a dog, there would have been a different result, you know. Somebody would have called the police, somebody would have called somebody, and, you know, I would have went to jail for animal endangerment. But for the life of me, I'm trying to figure out how is it that we as black men be treated as our lives don't matter. I mean, I'm really trying to figure this out right now, because it seems to me that animals, and I love animals, it seems to me that animals' lives are more valued than the black man's life. I mean, we can't forget that the white man put in the U.S. Constitution, his U.S. Constitution, that black people were 3/5 of human beings. Now, why would someone or anybody put that inside of a U.S. Constitution? I mean, you know, people call me radical, people call me whatever they call me. I'm just asking a question. Why would anybody put a human being 3/5 equal to a human being? I mean, I don't know. I'm a loss of words tonight. I'm really, I don't know if I'm emotional, because another black man is dead. Another black man is dead. D-E-A-D. That means that right now, as we speak, they have laid him to rest 6 feet under the ground. Why? Why didn't his life matter? And then, you know, we get this conversation as black people. Well, why do you say black lives matter? Why you don't say everybody lives matter? Because, damn it, we're talking about black people. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just so... And then the brother who was jogging, I believe I read something today, said that the people, I think, one, if I have this correct, I don't mind, because I was reading it fast. The guy that was filming, no, the guy who owns the house, that's right. Okay, so the guy who owns the house that the brother walked into in Georgia, looked around, and I believe he walked out. Didn't steal anything, didn't take anything. But the people who own that house didn't have any relationship with the people with the guns that shot him. But these two guys, from my understanding, I'd like for someone to call in and maybe correct me if I'm wrong. Please call in to 516-387-1474, 516-387-1474 to Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show, and we're talking about what happens now. And I'm going to get to Fresno in a minute, because I really got some issues with people in Fresno right now. I got some real issues right now that I'm going to talk about tonight. And everybody that know me know that I speak from my heart. So then the brother comes out the house, and if I read the report right, they said that they hit him with the truck, if I read it correctly today. And then all of a sudden, you know. But these were two people who were involved in law enforcement, okay, once upon a time, talking about they're going to do a citizen's arrest. You're going to do a citizen's arrest on someone who just walked out of a house with nothing in his hand. See, you were doing something called hunting. You were doing something called hunting. See, in the slave days, they would say, we're going to go hunt a nigga tonight. But see, you don't wait till nighttime anymore because you have gotten away with so much murder that you do it in broad daylight. Now, let's talk about the man who was doing a recording. Now, if I'm correct, if I'm wrong, someone please correct me, that he's been arrested too. He's been arrested too. But I would like to ask everyone who's listening right now. And I see my co-host is on the line. I'm going to bring him in right now. Let's turn the tables now. How many black police officers do we see going out killing white people? How many black police officers do we see putting their knee on somebody's neck? How many black police officers, and listen, I'm not saying all cops are bad, but evidently we got issues in America when it comes to police. So I'm not just making this all up tonight. We got some real problems that's going to need some real people with some backbone and some testicles to deal with this issue at hand right now. Now, I'm sure we got black police officers that's profiling and, you know, doing their thing too. Maybe it's just not reported. I don't know. But when I look at the ratio, see, we have to understand, first of all, where do policing come from, the word police? It comes from slavery. Okay, so I got folks writing stuff here. Okay, so let me just go back here and give shout-outs to Sean, Cousin, Jessica, Tiffany, thank you. Bishop, thank you. Elizabeth, thank you for tuning in. Washington, thank you. Hush, Cousin, Emily, thank you. Mass, thank you. Arlene, thank you for tuning in. Haynes, thank you for tuning in. Arlene, thank you. Okay, Hester, thank you. Okay, Janice, thank you. McCoy, thank you. Irene, thank you. Keith Kelly, hey Keith. So, I'm really just lost of words right now because, you know, this should not be happening. This should not be happening to anyone, but it's happening. And what do we do about it? How are we supposed to feel? Here we are as taxpayers paying for a service to a system that's been dysfunctional since slavery. As I was saying earlier, that police come from slavery. They had something called slave patrol, where the plantation masters would go out and catch runaway slaves. I mean, they actually had a badge that said slave patrol. So who was the police officers during that time? Plantation owners. Okay? And as we went through time, that same ideology, philosophy, and thought process is in the people today. These are their great, great, great grandchildren that we're dealing with here today. You think Bull Corner? I like for someone to look up Bull Corner. Let me see if I can pull up Bull Corner real quick. I want everybody to see who Bull Corner. If anybody know who Bull Corner is, can you give me a thumbs up real quick? Look up Bull Corner real quick. Just for the sake of it. I want you to see who Bull Corner is. Because, see, this whole police situation we're dealing with right now comes from white supremacy. That's where it comes from. Now, you may be scared to say it because you work, have a job, and I get it. I say what you're scared to say because you're scared of losing whatever you feel that you're going to lose in case you're boss find out that you said that there's white supremacy and systemic racism here in America. So I'll say it for you since you're scared. So I want to play just a clip of Bull Corner and show you his mindset as a white man. That the same mindset back in the 1960s and 50s, we still dealing with it today. Now, you may disagree with me, but I want to show you footage of how this white man talked and that his same mindset has cancer and all law enforcement across America. I just want to play. I just want to play just a little bit of this. Bear with me. He's not even talking loud. Jesus Christ. Can't even hear it. Okay. Let me see if I can find another.
In April 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. headed to Birmingham, Alabama to join in an anti-segregation march. By now, he was a national figure, often called in and lent his influence in local freedom struggles. The city of Birmingham had plenty of moderate white citizens, but they were used to keeping quiet. Many feared the rise of the Ku Klux Klan.
Whatsoever and we shall not!
The Klan had helped elect a white racist named Eugene Bull Connor as Birmingham's police chief. To put a stop to...
That's who I was talking about.
Connor said...
The police chief. It's probably related to Jerry Dyer.
Martin Luther King was tired as he arrived in Birmingham, but there was a feeling of excitement in the air, as if a breakthrough were about to happen. Then, Bull Connor's police moved in to arrest Dr. King. He knelt beside one of the police motorcycles and said a prayer. They waved him off to jail. There he wrote a passionate and angry letter to explain the reasons behind the civil rights movement. Didn't have any writing paper, so he wrote on the margins of the newspaper and on toilet paper.
Your first name becomes nigger. Your middle name becomes boy. will understand why we find it difficult to wait.
King's letter from a Birmingham jail was an indictment of American society for permitting racism to continue. But it ended with hope.
We will reach the goal of freedom in Birmingham and all over the nation, because the goal of America is freedom.
He talked about freedom as the American ideal, and then turned around and said, well, now blacks want to be part of that. He was asking white Americans, in a sense, to finally, after hundreds of years, confront this contradiction. They believed in freedom, and yet they denied freedom to African Americans. Which was their true self?
You're that cop. Look at him.
Asking white Americans,
grabbing
are
black
you Bull
folk.
Connor, or are you someone who believes in human rights? Forcing people to make a choice in a non-threatening manner.
On Friday, May 3rd, a new march took place in Birmingham. This time it included more than 1,000 students and young people. One of them was Patricia King.
Some of the times that we marched, people would be out there and they would throw rocks and cans and just things at us. I was afraid of getting hurt, but still I was willing to march until justice done.
Once again, Bull Connor called out his forces. Firemen turned on high-pressure hoses. When the water hit people, they were thrown on the ground and rolled screaming down the street. Police dogs bit three teenagers so badly, they had to be taken to the hospital. Five children were squeezed into a cell built for eight prisoners. Television cameras capture what was happening to Birmingham's children. Most hadn't realized how bad things were for blacks in the segregated South. But now, they saw it for themselves.
So, I just have a question for everybody. Has things really changed in America? You know? I mean, has things really, really changed for the condition of black people? I mean, I'm not sure if things has really changed for us, because Dr. King dealt with police brutality. That was in 1960. Here it is, 2020, we're still dealing with police brutality. Why is that? Why are we still dealing with police brutality? Is it because of the color of our skin? Let me bring my co-host in real quick. He's been waiting patiently, and I want to be able to get his perspective on what's going on here. I'm just lost of words tonight. 3205, are you with us this evening?
Hey, good evening, Pastor. How you doing?
I'm to be honest with you, I'm lost of words. I'm kind of emotional tonight because You know, when I read history, when I go through the documentaries, I'm seeing that we're still dealing with the same crap that our ancestors dealt with. And, you know, we supposed to be living in the land of the free and home of the brave, and we're supposed to have a U.S. Constitution that's supposed to protect our rights as people. And I don't see none of that happening right now. Not one iota. Bull Corner in Alabama, I really believe, had some type of cancerous spirit that his philosophy of policing is still happening today. The only thing that I don't see, Brother Tony, that's happening is shooting people down with water hoses anymore. But everything else is still the same.
You know, the only reason you do not see people getting shot down with water hoses recently here in the U.S. is because it hasn't happened yet. But I've seen them used in Stockholm. I've seen them used in Japan. I've seen them used in Korea. And you can bet, yes, the philosophy of Bull Connor, that good old Birmingham, Alabama police chief, I can guarantee you from the mid-60s on up, probably until 1975, down south and somewhere out here in the West, some of those tactics were taught. You can best believe that. You know, today has been an emotional day for Black America. They had the funeral for Brother George Floyd. Blessings upon his spirit and his family. Very emotional day. You know, while we've been looking at what happened with Brother Floyd, there was another brother. Last name is McAtee. He was shot down and murdered by the same police force in his city that he was seating for free whenever the officers come in there. Shot down and killed. Now they trying to figure out how he caught a bullet. You see, you keep saying, how come nothing's changed? Because America has always had this philosophy that Black people was less than. You tell me I'm three-fifths of a person,
but I don't care what you say, a lot of people still believe that. But how can we be a less than people when we are the people who built the damn country?
Exactly. The country would not exist if it was not for the labor of Black men, yellow men, brown men, red men. We built this country and supplied it with culture. White America has no culture to give. You know, they always real quick to holler, go back to Africa. You know what? I can tell you honestly, if I had to go back to Africa, I would have no problem figuring out where I came from. Okay? Hispanics got to leave here and go back across the border to Mexico and beyond. They ain't got no problem tracing their roots and going back to where they need to be. But white America gonna have a problem. Because one, white is a made up race. Two, you gonna have to really figure out where you from. Because you always holler you white, but you're Irish, you're Dutch, you're Norwegian, you're Italian. You're Danish. You're English. You got to figure it out. Where are you exactly from? It is truly amazing. You know, you mentioned Jerry Dyer. Y'all soon to be mayor in January. Jerry Dyer said during the unrest in Indianapolis made him realize that he was going to have to listen to people. Even though a lot of you, certain ones of you, were really against me, I picked up on that code, my brother. And I know who he was talking about. That's our camp. You know, this was the man that wouldn't debate you, wouldn't get on the stage with you, wouldn't walk down the same sidewalk with you. But he was saying that he was going to have to listen to the people of Fresno. And if you contact me, we can talk, because we're going to have one Fresno, a better Fresno. I'm willing to work with you. Really? We'll see. But no, America has tolerated us, and that's all they've ever done. Sure, there are many of you who think, hey, I got a decent house, I got a decent job, a decent car, little Susie goes to the right school, little Bobby playing for the right team. But the bottom line is, we are still the last hire, the first fired. We are still going to be the ones to get that promotion last, if ever. We are still the ones who are going to have our neighborhoods patrolled by peace officers, not from that area, and who out there to just beat and assault folks. Yeah, go right ahead, Pastor.
So here's where I'm at. Here's what I, you know, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. Please call in 516-387-1474. There's a double standard when it comes to community policing, a black community, brown community versus a white community. There's a double standard. In the eyes of the white police officers, when they come in our community, they already have a sense of discrimination already. Okay. And it's just humanistic, right? Because most white police officers don't even live in our community. They come work in our community, but you don't live in our community. See, that's one of the problems we're having, is that we talk about community policing, but none of the police live in a community. So it's sad, because it's like you're here for 12 hours and then you drive to Sanger. You're here for 8 hours and you drive to Kermit. You're here for 8 hours and you drive to Madera. So what is the invested interest of a police officer if you really care about the community you serve and work in? I would think that you would want to live in.
That's how you see.
Then it's easier for you, I would think, to build relationships with people in that community because you stay there. But it's the total opposite. You don't live here. You work here. You get the salary off our community, and you move somewhere else. All I'm saying, Brother Tony, is this has gotten to be so old. I mean, check this out. Kaepernick, football player, quarterback. He took a knee. He didn't rob a bank. He didn't rape a woman. He didn't molest a child. He saw him taking a knee because me as a black man of color, I'm protesting, and we got a problem with police brutality. What happened to him? He got castrated for playing football because the NFL Football League, which is ran lily white, all white owners, but yet you got all black players entertaining. The league castrated him and said, because you took a knee for black against police brutality, which has a historical background of the Ku Klux Klan. Since you took a knee, nobody in the NFL is going to hire you. Now, Kaepernick could have said, well, you know what? I take it back. I'm not going to take a knee no more. But he held on to his position. You know what I see now, Brother Tony, that's going on? I see police officers today taking a knee when George Floyd hearse was passing them. So how, I mean, the NFL ball needs to give him an apology. And they need to give him all his wages that he lost, because now everybody's taking a knee. And if everybody's taking a knee, and he took the first knee, but he got castrated because he was standing for moral reasoning in America.
Oh, yeah. You had
I seen
Colin
the mayor.
Kaepernick.
I seen the mayor of that city where George Floyd lives. He went up to the casket and he took a knee. You see the institutionalized racism that we're dealing with here? I mean, it's so...
You see it on a daily basis.
It's so thick that
but
white America...
It always has been. It always has been. They have been locked into this mold since the dawn of time. Here you had Colin Kaepernick, a biracial child, take a knee and say, we have a major problem with police brutality here in the United States. And conservatives all across the country tried to twist that boy's argument. They tried to turn it into he was attacking the military. He was attacking veterans. He was attacking the flag. He did nothing of the kind. But see, for the NFL, Colin Kaepernick is bad for business. This is why the majority of the owners got together, and some did the same, but this is why the majority of the owners got together, went to the commissioner, said, look, make a deal with him and pay him off. It'll be easier for us to pay him off than allow him to stay on the team, draw a salary for the next 15, 16 years, and still keep his message out there on point. We can pick off the stragglers. You know, those are guys who came along and decided they was going to take a knee or they was going to stand with their fist up. If you paid attention to what went on in the NFL, those guys slowly started to disappear. America has always decided that don't care who else comes up, what other race comes up, we're going to keep our foot on the black man. We cannot allow him to reclaim what we know is truly his.
Why?
That's this country that we built.
I like to ask our listening audience to call in, first of all. Please call in at 516-387-1474. Why do white America, now I'm going to say this, if the shoe don't fit, I'm not talking to you. So I'm not saying all. Why do white America hate black people so much? That's my question. If someone calls and answer that question for me, why do white America, I'm not saying all, so if the shoe don't fit, I'm not talking to you. Why do white America hate? I'm talking about literally hate. See, Brother Tony, just to let everybody know, this Sunday, I'm going to be on the, I think it's Channel 24 early morning show. And I'm going to be talking about all this police stuff. I'm really going to bring it home to Fresno. Because, see, Fresno right now want to act like they don't have no damn problems. And Fresno had one of the number one corrupted police department under Jerry Dyer, who's now our mayor now of Fresno. He is the most corrupted, one of the most corrupted police departments in the country. So I'm going to be talking about all of this Sunday morning. And I'll be getting that information out to everyone so that you can tune in and listen to what I have to say. Fresno, you know, there's a lot going on in Fresno right now with the Black Lives Matter movement and the police co-opting the Black Lives Matter movement, and certain leaders are being, you know, used from my perspective, and our children, youth, Black youth, being manipulated. That's my perspective of what's going on in Fresno. Now, I want to play another clip. I don't know if my cousin Sean is still on from Colorado, but this clip here is specifically from Colorado. One thing everybody has to understand is about the Ku Klux Klan. It is embedded in law enforcement all over the world. The FBI came out with data and said that white supremacy people, individual people, are embedded in the law enforcement agencies throughout the nation. Okay. Now, I want to play this clip here because people, I think they really still don't understand that the racism that we're dealing with today came from what I'm about to show you right now.
Second highest per capita membership in the KKK. Hi, I'm John Ferrugia. The 1920s saw an unprecedented statewide wave of power and influence of the Ku Klux Klan, and the effect of this hate lingers today. And now, Colorado experience, KKK. Every so often, society goes crazy, and the fringe elements of our community becomes mainstream. And that was never more apparent than in the 1920s when the Ku Klux Klan took over politics in Colorado.
They spelled the state of Colorado with a K as opposed to a C. Everybody was determined by the Grand Dragon. The governor, the state senator, city mayor, police chief, sheriff.
It was almost 100 years ago. Our again was a similar environment politically and socially.
It is a cautionary tale. If we are not in denial of the power of the Klan in Colorado, we are better set up to be more honest about ourselves than who we are now.
The program was funded by the
I just asked a question as we're moving forward. Where did all these white sheets go?
With support from the Denver
Public
Library,
where did all of these
from these fine organizations and viewers like you. Thank you.
Where did all the white sheets go?
Thou was a crucial force for the Black coordination. And then there's the Klan of the 1920s, which is more or less nationwide. And then in our time, there is a recreated third round of the Klan.
We need to study the KKK for the simple reason that the terror that they inflicted on this country in the past is not revisited in the present. It doesn't move forward in the future.
It's really hard to imagine how casually racist American society was in the 1920s. It was not heard of to have lynchings of Italian immigrants or Mexicans or African Americans, even in a place like Colorado.
One of the great indicators of this growing xenophobia was D.W. Griffith's movie, The Birth of a Nation, probably the bestseller of its time, painting a picture of these innocent white women in the South being haunted by blacks, glorifying the whole South, denigrating black folks.
It showed white males dressed up in Klan uniforms, standing up for the white race against a threat. They were depicted as knights. They were on horses. They had lamps.
And it really was a movie that was about the scourge of black folk in the country. A Georgia businessman, a member of various fraternal lodges named William Joseph Simmons, revived the Ku Klux Klan. He created a social organization like the Rotary Club, except that it was based on Simmons' definition of 100% Americanism, white, native-born Protestant. And he created a hierarchy of recruiters. They called them cleans, who will go around the country and local chapters and sell memberships to the Klan.
William Simmons shows up at the Brown Palace Hotel in 1921, said a little group called the Denver Doers Club. And this evolves into what becomes the Klan.
The Ku Klux Klan comes to Denver and quickly spreads across the state with strongholds in Grand Junction and Canyon City. The Klan ideology mirrors the sentiments of the day. People are eager to try something new.
Coming out of the First World War, Americans were done with international adventures.
We were just coming off a period of tremendous reform, the progressive era. There was a tremendous crackdown against labor unions and others who might be affiliated with socialism.
Prohibition, women's suffrage, urban reform, immigration reform. Americans by the 1920s had enough. Massive strikes in the United States. A lot of this unrest was blamed on Eastern and Southern European immigrants.
And also, this ties into the prohibition issue. Those Irish were still drinking their whiskey, the Germans still wanted their beer, the Italians still drank their wine, despite the law. These were lawless foreigners. We should send them back to wherever they came from.
In places like Pueblo and Trinidad, coal companies are importing huge waves of new immigrants, and the Western Slope fruit orchards needed cheap seasonal labor as well. There were people who believed that our nation was changing and not in a way that was positive for them. This provided fertile ground for the Klan to recruit in Colorado. A widespread failure of prohibition seemed to many Americans to indicate that America's morals were sliding. The automobile created these new private spaces for young people to get together.
The appeal in the 1920s for a lot of women was to get out and work. The Roaring Twenties, shorter skirts. The Klan was aghast at these kinds of things.
The Klan to this day always did see themselves as a law and order institution, that they were protecting America.
This crime fixation, free-floating anxiety, what do we do after a world war? We have to get things pulled back together. We have to have the central values of 100% Americanness.
And the Klan, they were going to stop the corruption and bring law and order to the Queen City of the Plains.
The Klan has always been, at least historically, broad-based organization.
It opposed alcohol, it opposed extramarital sex, pregnancy out of wedlock, Catholics.
It was based upon discrimination against minority groups, the Negro and the Catholic, and the Jews. There are a lot of people who fall for that kind of thing.
There's a weird hierarchy of titles. The Imperial Wizard is the national leader. That was Simmons. The leader of a state was known as the Grand Dragon. And Colorado's Grand Dragon was a man named John Galen Locke. John Galen Locke had moved to Colorado as a young man. He had served in the Spanish-American War in the Philippines. And then he got a medical degree in homeopathy.
He was a person of excessive confidence and vision, very arrogant. He was a figure who knew how to work systems and how to be not an elected official himself, but to manipulate them within an inch of their lives.
John Galen Locke was an odd-looking man. He was rotund.
Weighed 250 pounds. He was short. He was fat. Some people called him the Toad. He set up a private office at 1325 Glenarm Place. You would see John Galen Locke sitting there in the throne, guarded by two Great Danes and also bodyguards.
He was reasonably intelligent. His office was filled with armor and things that came from the Middle Ages. He was a romantic. He really believed in what he was doing.
Kept as his personal secretary a Catholic. He was married to a Catholic. His lawyer was Jewish.
He was really a quite courageous man. Dr. Locke had no animosity whatsoever for Jewish, Catholic, or Negro. He loved these people. He would do anything to help them if they were ill. And he was so unconscious of the social consequences of what he was doing. It never occurred to him that he was doing a great disservice. To him, the Klan was a wonderful opportunity for showmanship. Oh, but those Klansmen were sincere. They thought this was good. They were going to make Klansmen out of every Catholic in the state. They were going to make Klansmen out of every Jew before they got through. They thought they were saving the world.
They preyed upon these people and just scared them to death. They applied economic pressures that were fantastic, and many, many, many bankruptcies were caused by the ostracizing of the people.
Locke's primary motivation was not racism, but power. Under his rule, he turned Colorado's Ku Klux Klan into an extremely powerful voting bloc.
John Gay had 138 paid organizers, which started out usually with respectable established institutions, such as the Masons or the Protestant churches, and they would appear all of a sudden in their regalia in the middle of a service and donate, give money, build up goodwill, and say, we will protect you against these foreigners, against these evil elements.
Some of our best men got sucked into this thing and found out afterward just how badly they had been misled.
We were Klan Central. Colorado had the second highest per capita membership after Indiana. There were maybe 35 or 40,000 members. Nobody really knows. The Klan claimed as many as 75,000 or even up to a quarter of a million, what they called loyal residents.
From the high and mighty to just your average everyday coal miner.
So we're going to stop right there. I'm going to go back to our board. What I wanted to show my point was that the things that we're dealing with today with law enforcement was breeded out of the Ku Klux Klan. I will say that where did all the sheiks go? They marched on Washington. They were on every they were in every city across the United States. What are your thoughts about that, Brother Tony, the Klan right now?
You know, I can remember playing football in high school and having to go to Clovis to Delta Monica Stadium to play against Clovis High. And I can remember the Klan booted and booted, marching into the stadium, up and along the back rails of the stadium. The Klan's presence has never left this country. And unfortunately for us, many of them are our bosses, doctors, lawyers. Oh, yeah. The Klan is alive and well here in the United States of America.
Do you think the Klan is still in the police departments?
Of course. Just like every other white supremacist group. That would be almost a prerequisite for what they do. You know, there's no way in the world that you cannot believe that many officers who subscribe to that philosophy are right there up front and center. Like I said, a lot of those tactics of Bull Connor was passed on down to the next generation of cops, the next generation of cops over there in Mississippi, over in Louisiana, up and down Florida, wherever, and especially with a Klan connection, wherever that stronghold was. That's like today. They're active today with no problem. They've gone high tech, just like many of the others.
Right, right, right. Well, today we have the burial of George Floyd. This Saturday I will be on the early morning show. I believe it's on Channel 24. I'll have to get the time. Talking about police issues and really what's going on in Fresno. We have major issues going on right now in Fresno with our police department, which is one of the most rotten police departments in the country, and the Chief Dyer leadership, which is now our mayor now. unfortunately. I ran for mayor here. The power structure would not allow me to debate Dyer because they knew that I had the goods on him. And so they made it where he would only debate certain people, but they would not allow him to debate me. So, but it's okay. We ran a good race. We did the best we could, and we came in third. And we was the last to file. So that just shows you that people do believe in me and the message that we had during that time. And so we're just going to keep the pressure on. Moving forward, we're kind of at the end of our show now. We're just checking in, letting everybody know that today is the day of the funeral for George Floyd. I am planning another protest here in the next week or two. I'll be letting everybody know that when, where, what time as we move forward. Everybody stay safe. Watch your surroundings. You know, we're in this virus mode right now. Keep your hands washed. You know, do what you got to do. Be responsible, you know, because we want to make sure everyone is healthy. And so visit our Facebook, my Facebook, Floyd E. Harris Jr. Google my name. Reverend Dr. Floyd E. Harris Jr. Go to YouTube, put in my name, kind of see, you know, the work I've been doing across the country and those partnerships and relationships with people. Visit the Freedom School. Fresno Freedom School, www.fresnofreedomschool.com. Visit that, put that in your Google search, YouTube, and et cetera. And so we're at the end of our show. We want to thank Brother Tony for coming on this evening, giving his perspective about what's going on here in America. You know, tonight topic was what happens now, what happens now. And so, hey, our ancestors built this country. Let's keep building it. Let's work together. Let's find a way to work together. Let's encourage one another. Let's start building businesses in our community. Let's start doing something to where it's productive, right, for our community. Fresno, we know our community here is divided. Let's just keep it real, keep it 100. Y'all know that's how I talk. And we have to figure out as a people here, what are we going to do to help bridge the gap for, you know, working with one another. It sounds simple, but it's very, very difficult. And I've been trying for over 30-some years trying to figure it out. I still haven't figured it out. So, but we can figure it out together as a community. You know, so we're proud of our Freedom School students, supporters who came out last week. We had Big Red out there. Hopefully I'll get my students to come on the show to kind of talk about their experiences and et cetera. We will be having another farmer's market at the 1st of July or somewhere in there. It's really, really hot right now, which that's what the vegetable needs, but it is, we don't need it, but the vegetables need it. Moving forward, I'd like to thank those who are on the line right now, Brother Tony, Washington, Tanisha, Washington, thank you again for tuning in tonight. Haynes, thank you for tuning in. Much love to everybody, Ward. And listen to our next Tuesday night show. It's going to be hot with Maria Eltz and Allen Reed. It's going to be a hot show. Man, it's going to be a hot show. We had technical difficulty this week, but they're getting everybody lined up. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Brother Tony, can you give us our last saying?
You know, like I said, today was an emotional day for Black America and for most Americans with the service for Brother Floyd. look here, everybody. Stay safe. Stay with your head and chins up. But most of all, stay hopeful because change is coming. Keep working towards it. Do not let nobody steal your joy or tell you otherwise. Change is coming. Everybody have a peaceful night. I'll holler.